From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson. It is the first statewide issue you will vote on this November. What to do about water? Proposition 1 would give us permission to sell more than $7 billion of bonds for a wide array of water projects. Supporters of Prop 1 say now is the time to get this work done. Opponents say California cannot afford the extra debt and we need to spend that money elsewhere. But the fact remains, we need water, and we are rapidly running out. In this hour, as part of our Election Watch 2014 coverage, we'll break down the item, hear from both sides, and take your questions and thoughts. Proposition 1, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News. The water we drink, the water that grows our crops, the water that provides habitat for animals in California, where does it come from? And where will it come from in the future? There is plenty of work to do to protect and preserve that supply. An item on this November's ballot might help the state prepare for its future water needs. Proposition 1 would authorize California to spend $7.5 billion on a wide array of projects: water storage, habitat restoration, groundwater cleanup, flood protection, and more. It's a complex proposal that state lawmakers want you to take very seriously. In this hour of Forum, as part of our Election Watch 2014 coverage, we'll explain Proposition 1, hear from the yes and no campaigns, and take your questions and thoughts. First, let's get some basic information on Prop 1. Joining us by phone is Paul Rogers, the managing editor of KQED's Science Unit and the environment writer for the Mercury News. He joins us from San Jose. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start off with some basic information, and then we'll get to Prop 1. First of all, please answer that question I posed at the top of the show. Where does our water come from?
That's pretty complicated, but the short version is about three-quarters of the rain and snow in California falls in the north, and three-quarters of the people live in the south. So we have built the largest system the United States has ever seen of dams, canals, pumps, and other systems to move that water from north to south. And basically what happens is it snows in the winter, most winters when we're not in the middle of a drought.
Right.
It snows a lot in the Sierra Nevada mountains. That snow builds up, and then when it melts, it flows down rivers which come out of the Sierras. A lot of us have whitewater rafted on those rivers or seen them in various places, and then that water all flows into two large rivers: the Sacramento River, which flows from north to south, and the San Joaquin, which flows from south to north, and they meet in the Delta. And the Delta, the water then flows out through San Francisco Bay and out into the ocean. And we have two very large systems, a state system called the State Water Project and a federal system called the Central Valley Project. And they have big pumps in the town of Tracy. And they pump that water from the Delta, which is basically the melting snow we just talked about. They pump it south to farms and cities, everywhere from San Jose and the South Bay and Silicon Valley, all the way down to farmers in the Central Valley, to Los Angeles, and to the city of San Diego. There are many other places that people get water, including the Colorado River in Southern California, and from a lot of wells all over the state, and other sources as well. But that's really the primary place.
So that's where our water comes from. Where will it come from in the future?
It's going to come from those same places. But the future is a little bit dodgy for a number of reasons. As we've seen, we're in the middle of a three-year drought. We're in the worst drought since at least 1976-77. Most of our reservoirs right now, the big ones, are only about a third full. Most of the big cities in California got 40% of their annual rainfall this year or less. And so we're in a really bad drought, and some people think it's the worst one in 100 years. And so there hasn't been the snow to melt to fill those reservoirs. And in the future, as the world continues to warm from climate change, that snow is going to be melting more quickly, and that's going to disrupt our water system. So what we're seeing is a couple of different approaches to that. We're seeing a lot of conservation at cities around California. Los Angeles and many of the Bay Area cities actually use the same amount of water now as they did 30 years ago, despite population growth.
Right.
Farmers continue to use about 80% of the water that people use in California, although there's been some efficiencies there with drip irrigation, and they're growing more, you know, crops with the same amount of water. But we're seeing more regional solutions to water. So, for example, I was just in San Diego a few months ago. They're building the largest ocean desalination plant in North America down in the town of Carlsbad. It's a billion-dollar project. It's going to provide about 8 or 9% of the water for San Diego County, and it comes online in about a year.
So, Paul, it seems like there's a lot going on in terms of water conservation and projects, and interestingly enough, we're already starting to get comments and questions about Prop 1, so we better dive into that right now.
All right.
Tell us what Prop 1 would do if voters approved it, briefly.
Basically, it would allow the state to sell $7.5 billion in bonds for a whole range of projects. And there's essentially seven buckets, and I'll hit them really quick. The biggest bucket is $2.7 billion for storage. That could be for new dams. That's the most controversial part of this. There's another $1.5 billion for watershed restoration. That's basically helping fish, wildlife, and creating new parks. There's $900 million to clean up polluted groundwater, which we could then drink if we cleaned it up. Another $800 million for water conservation projects. You know, these would be grants to cities to do things like give you money if you buy a low-flush toilet. And then other money for other projects like water recycling, wastewater treatment, and improving the levees in the Delta and other places.
And if voters reject Prop 1, then what happens? These projects don't just disappear, do they?
They do. Many of them either would be delayed and not built because we're not getting a lot of federal money right now with the Republicans in the House limiting spending, particularly for California. So there's very little of that. And local areas would have to come up with their own money. And we've seen some local reservoirs built in the last 15 years. Contra Costa County built a big one called Los Vaqueros with its own money. And there's another one down in Riverside County called Eastside Reservoir, which Metropolitan Water District built. So we would have some of these projects. We wouldn't have as many. And, you know, the debate, as we're going to hear, is over what is the best way to spend this money. And remember, bond money is debt. It's basically putting money on the credit card. So we have to pay it back with interest over time.
Speaking of that debate, let's dive into it. Joining us in our Sacramento studio is Jay Ziegler. He is the Director for External Affairs and Policy for the Nature Conservancy, and he supports Prop 1. Jay, welcome to the program.
Josh, good morning. Thank you.
Also here in the studio with me is Barbara Berrigan-Paria. She is the Executive Director of Restore the Delta and the spokesperson for the No on One campaign. Barbara, glad to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Jay, why should California vote yes on Prop 1?
Well, look, this bond, the 2014 water bond, really represents an approach to get California back on track to more sustainable water management. Together with the recently enacted groundwater management reforms, this bond provides a framework for more sustainable management of California's most precious resources, both for the environment, for the needs of people, and ultimately our economy. And certainly this bond is different than its predecessor and includes important investments in conservation, recycling, stormwater, groundwater cleanup, and with a balancing of addressing long overdue and ongoing environmental impacts, and really reflects this important approach of not just meeting the systemic needs of California's water system. Paul noted that we have the most complicated water system in the world. What we have not done over time is to adequately address the impacts of that system and how it really takes a toll on fish, wildlife, and environmental values that we all care about: clean water, water in our rivers, waters in the streams, waters through the Delta. And so this approach, this bond, is really the product of an overwhelming effort of stakeholders coming together to put forward what is really a smart approach. And again, together with the recently enacted groundwater management reforms that the governor signed into law this week, mm-hmm. really puts the state on a path toward more sustainable water management. And that's a step forward for all of us.
Barbara Berrigan-Perillo, why should California vote no on Prop 1?
Well, Proposition 1 really doesn't do anything to address the problems in the current drought. It shortchanges, we believe, sustainable water programs. In fact, in this final version of the water bond, groundwater conservation, recycling, those type of programs were cut by 36% compared to what had been drafted in prior versions of the bond. It will also add an incredible amount of more debt to the state, $14 billion to be paid back over 40 years, taking away money from schools, public health, and safety. In addition, Proposition 1 is going to devastate fisheries for the Bay Area because it's going to accelerate water exports, and it's going to force taxpayers to buy water that they already own. And $2.7 billion set aside for three large dam projects that will prevent flows from moving through the rivers, through the Delta, and out through the San Francisco Bay.
So what do you believe, Barbara, would be a better way of dealing with the state's water problems? If not Prop 1, then what?
Ideally, the water bond that we wanted would have been a bond that would have had money for clean drinking water for communities in need and for immediate near-term actions to help communities through the drought. Anything that would promote regional self-sufficiency. We would have had greater amounts go into water recycling, conservation, stormwater capture, and groundwater cleanup for a greater segment of California.
So perhaps a bond, but not this bond.
Correct.
Jay, if we rejected Prop 1 this November, what is the risk we run? What do you believe would happen to our water supply if we voted no?
I just want to address something that Barbara said there, because I think it's really a misrepresentation to say that this bond is going to accelerate exports out of the Delta. I think of significance, every legislator that represents the Delta of every stripe of conservative Republican to liberal Democrat has rejected that notion and actually voted in favor of this bond. And so I just want to make sure that we don't have a perception of this bond as increasing exports, because there's nothing in this bond that is any way about increasing exports. And in fact, what the bond does do is to prioritize water for communities most at risk, and to address in a balanced way environmental impacts. And additionally, there's nothing in this bond that says that it is going to be about surface storage projects. What this bond does do is to empower the California Water Commission to make decisions about the most cost-effective kinds of storage projects that protect the public interest. And the public interest is about clean water. It is about water in our streams. And the investment by the public is actually defined in those terms. And so any storage project has to come up with the capital needed to make that project viable.
Hey, let me hold you
the
there.
Public values that are
you've addressed. Thrown a lot out there, and I want to give Barbara a chance to respond.
Thank you. The $1 billion that's set aside in Proposition 1 for a purchase of water works in the following way. Water is owned by the public trust in California. They've set aside money and funds where the public would be paying for water to put back in rivers and streams. On the surface, it sounds like a good idea. Problem is that when it flows into the Delta, it becomes abandoned water. That water becomes available for export. In 2013, with BDCP planning,
BDCP?
Bay Delta Conservation Plan, that's the governor's plan to build the twin tunnels through the Delta. A memo was produced that explained that the proponents of that project needed a fund created for $1 billion to $1.5 billion so that there would be additional flows made for export. Whether the project's built or not, if we continue taking too much water out of the Delta, as we have in the present, and with an accelerated water export program, the Delta will die the death of 1,000 cuts. If that water gets put into the tunnels, the Delta will die in one fell swoop.
We're discussing California's Proposition 1 with Paul Rogers of KQED Science Unit, Prop 1 supporter Jay Ziegler, and Barbara Berrigan-Perea of the No on 1 campaign. We'd love to hear from you. We're already beginning to get a number of comments online, and we're getting a few people calling in on the phone. You are definitely welcome to this debate. Call us, 866-733-6786. What do you think we should do about the water supply? What do you need to know about Prop 1 so that you can make an informed decision this November? 866-733-6786. Email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. Paul Rogers from KQED Science, let me switch over to you for just a second and we'll talk about the politics of this and the economics of this, just to give a little more background info. Talk to us about who, in terms of lawmakers and policymakers and political interests, is on each side of Prop 1.
Yeah, the politics are fascinating. As you heard, the environmental community is split. Both of the guests who you have on either side represent environmental organizations. The people supporting Prop 1 include Jerry Brown, Dianne Feinstein, and Barbara Boxer. So there's the Democratic sort of power triumvirate. But also the Chamber of Commerce and the Farm Bureau Federation on the more conservative side, but also the State Building and Construction Trades Council of California, the labor unions, and then the environmental groups who support it are the Audubon Society, the Nature Conservancy, NRDC, and then there's groups like the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, the business group down here who support it. The no side also includes environmental groups like the Center for Biological Diversity, Friends of the River, which has spent years fighting large dam projects, Barbara's group, and also fishing groups that people might be familiar with, like the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. And, you know, there are, I think, three or four big differences that come out in these debates over this particular issue, but in the end, a lot of it comes down to, do supporters feel that the other items in the bond, the conservation, the water recycling, the money to buy parkland, does that outweigh the risk, they think, of building new dams?
Right.
Dams are something that we've been fighting about in California for 40 years. The 10 largest dams in California were all built before 1979. We haven't built a major dam in 40 years, 45 years. And so this bond offers the potential that one or two could be built, one called Sites Reservoir up in Colusa County, which is an off-stream reservoir, another one called Temperance Flat down in the hills near Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park above Fresno, and then potentially raising the height of Shasta Reservoir. But as Jay mentioned, those aren't spelled out and guaranteed in the bond. The money could also, that storage money, could be spent for groundwater storage. It'll be up to the California Water Commission. So it's basically where people are in terms of their, you know, comfort factor with dams, and also that environmental water account that Barbara was mentioning. Are big growers going to be able to take public money and get water that is ostensibly helping the environment, and then buy it cheap and resell it to the public at a higher cost, and end up getting a financial benefit. So,
and Paul, that's an important point to make, and I think Barbara, that's what you meant when you said paying for water that we already own. Paul, that's an important point to make, is that Proposition 1, as I understand it, is not a laundry list of projects that we're going to do. So if I'm voting yes for Prop 1, I'm not voting for 87-odd super-specific projects. I'm voting to authorize the state to raise the money for certain kinds of projects, but the details still have yet to be worked out if Prop 1 passes, right?
Exactly. And that's really important for people to realize. As I mentioned at the top, there are about seven different categories. And what will happen in a lot of these, so for example, the conservation money, cities will apply to the state if this passes for different amounts of money, and they'll have to compete with each other to see who can save the most water with the amount they get. And so, you know, the state would dole out, you know, maybe $50 million to San Francisco to offer rebates for people who buy, you know, efficient washing machines, and, you know, $25 million to Fresno for people who put in, you know, take out lawns in their backyard.
As examples,
things like
yeah.
That. Yeah, and it's like what we do with some school funding.
Right.
But in the past, you know, this bond has a checkered past. This is the third time around for it. Governor Schwarzenegger put it on the ballot in 2010. To get the votes to put it on the ballot in the legislature, he had to completely lard it up with pork. It was an $11 billion bond. It was full of all kinds of stuff, bicycle trails at Lake Tahoe. There was money for parks in former Assembly Speaker Karen Bass's district. There was just all sorts of money for the Salton Sea.
Right.
And when the economy crashed, the polling showed that the public thought California already had too much debt. Jerry Brown ran to balance the budget, and legislators took it off the ballot in 2010. They took it off in 2012. And they just had a big fight this summer on how to cut it down from 11 to 7. And now it's polling pretty well. The most recent L.A. Times poll a couple of days ago had it at 56%. There was a field poll that had it at 52%, yes, a week before that. And there's a new PPIC poll coming out in a few days.
Hey, Paul, let me jump in and let Barbara and Jay chime in on that before we start going back to calls and emails. By the way, for the rest of this, we're coming up on a break, but for the rest of the half hour, the next half hour, I want to try to devote as much as we can to your calls, your emails, your questions, and I'll just try to fade into the background so you, Jay, and Barbara can have the conversation and you can figure out, hopefully, how you want to vote on Prop 1. Barbara, go ahead.
Two issues I'd like to go back and address. One is the way the funding works, the continuous funding for the three proposed dam projects. Those funds do not require any legislative oversight going forward. They're the largest portion of the bond. Temperance Flat, Sites Reservoir, and the raising of Shasta Dam would only make 316,000 acre-feet of new water in California. That's about enough water to irrigate 90,000 acres of almonds in the San Joaquin Valley. That water isn't going to benefit any urban areas. The amount of money that's been put into the recycling conservation cleanup is about 13%. If you put in groundwater cleanup with that, you're looking at about 24% of the bond. When we came to this final draft of this bond, the pork portions with the dams was only cut by about 10%. It's the immediate near-term measures that were cut by 36%. So we don't see the bond as being effective. Now, in terms of the polling, bond measure is starting in the low 50s. We see that as a very weak position. Usually, when you start with a proposition, you want to be closer to 60%. There are a lot of undecided voters out there. We believe as they learn more about the pork barrel spending, they will change their mind.
Jay Ziegler, let me give you a chance to chime in.
Yeah, look, there's a really strong base of support for this bond for the simple reason that it represents a smart strategy to deal with the drought, to deal with issues, and to get us on a more sustainable track in water management. This year alone, we will tap groundwater aquifers in California to the tune of more than 5 million acre-feet of water. And we believe strongly that as the Water Commission looks at these issues, they're going to see that groundwater recharge and groundwater storage is a much better economic bet over time, can deliver water faster, cheaper, and more effectively for urban interests and agriculture and wildlife. And that connection has really been well drawn this year. I think the significance of California now becoming the last state in the country to effectively adopt groundwater management reforms is a strong statement to that effect. And the overwhelming support for this bond is not an accident. There's not one of the issues that Barbara has mentioned that gets any better if this bond is defeated, and Californians recognize that. We are in a drought that we're at least 3 years in, and we don't know how long it's going to go, and Californians want answers. And a big part of the importance of this bond is the portfolio of new investments that it will launch to make water supply more reliable for people and for nature.
Well, Jay, we're going to talk more about those issues on the other side of this break. We'll continue our conversation on Proposition 1 with Paul Rogers of KQED Science Unit, Prop 1 supporter Jay Ziegler, and Prop 1 opponent Barbara Berrigan-Perea. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you today. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing California's Proposition 1, a wide-ranging bond for water projects across the state, with Paul Rogers of KQED's Science Unit, Prop 1 supporter Jay Ziegler, and Prop 1 opponent Barbara Berrigan-Perea. Now's the time for you to join the conversation. Call us, 866-733-6786. Email us, the address is forum at kqed.org.
Find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. I can tell you right now the phone lines are full. I expect them to be busy for the rest of this hour, which is great. Please keep the calls coming. If you can't get through on the phones, get to us online. We were getting some really good comments online, including a few that I'll read real quick. One listener wrote to us online, "We have only a bit more than a third the population of Germany with less land area, so I think we have a ways to go before we really exhaust our carrying capacity." One listener wrote on Twitter, "Do not forget the Kern and Truckee rivers." And Bob writes online, "Ask yourself what benefit you've seen from the many tens of billions of dollars spent on prior water bonds over the last 20 to 30 years. Not much, I'd guess. From my perspective as a water resources engineer, the large majority of past bond money has been spent on endless studies, consultant contracts, etc. Why should this bond be any different? I'll vote no on this, as I have on all the past bonds, because this too will go to more studies." Barbara Berrigan-Perea, that seems to be, I mean, it's a no vote, but it seems to be a no vote for different reasons than you're suggesting people vote no.
Well, yes, actually, I do agree to a degree with that last statement. Look, we have $1.5 billion earmarked in this bond for conservancies, for projects like bike trails, hiking trails, and administration costs. Those are not projects that will make new water for California. In addition, we have to look at the history of habitat restoration projects, particularly in the Delta. Our colleagues at the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance did an extensive report during the comments for the Delta Tunnels project, showing that we have really created Arkansas Lake habitat in the Delta with these habitat projects because of inadequate flows. The bond is moving towards throwing good money after bad. Until we address the flow issue in the Delta, habitat is not going to restore fisheries.
All right, let's dive in on the phones, beginning with Peter in Palo Alto. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. I had a question for you. I heard you say that the Prop 1 had various smells, but I didn't hear anything about any desalinization plants. And you had mentioned earlier in the program that San Diego's got one that's going to provide about 8%. So why is there not more money going into desalinization?
You know what, Peter, let me put that question to Paul Rogers from KQED Science. Paul?
Yeah, there is money that could potentially be spent on desalination from this bond, Peter. There's $725 million, or about 10% of the money is for what they're calling advanced water treatment. So that could be water recycling, which is what San Jose and Orange County are already doing, where you take sewage water, you clean it to super high levels, and rather than putting it in the ocean or in San Francisco Bay, you use it for non-potable uses like irrigating sports fields and landscaping and using, you know, industrial cooling and things like that. But that same $725 million could be used for those projects or for desalination. The thing about desal that you have to remember is it's the most expensive way to get water. It costs about five times as much to get a gallon of water from the ocean because of all the energy you have to use as to get a gallon of water from from the Delta or even from recycling and certainly from conservation, which is the cheapest.
Let's go back to the phones. Julie in Sacramento. Julie, good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a few comments. First, just thinking outside of the box, I'm wondering if we can purchase water from states such as Oregon or Washington State that get a substantial amount of rainfall, put in some type of infrastructure so that we can store that water, get that water down to California, of course, without ruining their ecosystem. And then my second question is, with the groundwater reform, how is that going to affect ranchers, farmers, or just people that live in rural areas who have private wells? And I'll take any comments off the line. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Julie. Jay Ziegler, can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, on the private wells issue, largely unless the private wells are serving disadvantaged communities, they are not eligible for funding in this bond. I just want to address a couple of assertions that Barbara had that again, are very misleading about this bond. The restoration money for rivers, lakes, and watersheds in this bond is not going to bike trails or hiking. It is actually going to watershed restoration. As Paul noted at the top of this discussion, which comprised in the Sierra Nevada some 60% of the source water that Californians depend on up and down the state. And I would also underscore the point that the biggest difference in the bond that voters are seeing on the ballot versus bonds that were in play in the legislative discussion is a really drastic cut in funding for restoration actions in the Delta. So if somebody actually is going to make the argument that we don't need to restore the Delta as an argument for this bond, that's a bit crazy on its head, because what we've seen here is that those are exactly kind of the projects that were taken out in order to protect a concept that both legislators from Southern California and Northern California felt strongly about, that this bond had to be absolutely neutral on questions of the Twin Tunnels or the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. So I think it's important that we really address the facts and what is in this bond, the diverse approach in really providing a much broader regional basis to address water supply needs, and to begin to balance some of the environmental impacts that this extraordinary water infrastructure system has caused over the past 50, 100 years.
Barbara?
And so,
what Jay is calling a diverse approach, we would call a real true lack of specificity. There is money in the bond for bike trails and hiking trails and $1 billion in administration fees. Habitat conservation plans have been marked as in the Delta as restoration for prior damage done in the Delta, but they float in categories back and forth between the Bay Delta Conservation Plan and mitigation for damage that was prior done in the past. You know, and this is a particular example. Staten Island, which is owned by the Nature Conservancy in the Delta, was purchased with $35 million of public money. They are responsible for the habitat for greater sandhill cranes, and yet the easement is owned by the Department of Water Resources. They're looking at putting the tunnels under that land, which would just be devastating for that species. And those are the kind of projects that we see, whereas habitat that has been created for fisheries is overgrown with invasive species. They are mercury sinkholes, and they have not produced the results that we need to see, and they can't until there's freshwater flows restored.
And just to be clear, this is a Staten Island in California. This is not the one we're thinking.
Yes, the minute
Delta. Exactly, the minute you said Staten Island. Let's go back to the phones. Jonathan in San Jose. Jonathan, good morning.
Yes, two quick questions. The first is, bonds are good for distributing cost over benefit, period, and 40 years was mentioned. So how long will this project benefit the Bay Area? Will it benefit 40 years less or more? The second question is, can you put a figure to the ratio between the interest on this and the bit of what actually goes for work on this project? So I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Paul Rogers, can you briefly explain how the bill, how the proposition is built in terms of paying it back?
Yeah, just like all bonds, when we sell bonds to build highways, schools, roads, we also sell them for water projects. And it's like a mortgage on your house. A bond is basically an IOU. It's a piece of paper that California sells to investors, and then you give them money. You give California money if you're an investor, and you get back your principal with interest, usually a few percent, up to about 5% a year. And they are conservative investments that you use to help balance out the stocks that you invest. So just like when you pay off your credit card over time, the interest adds up. So pretty much the rule of thumb is whatever a bond is on the ballot, if it's $5 billion, then it'll generally cost $10 billion overall when all the interest is factored in over the 40 years. And in this case, I think as Barbara mentioned, this is a $7 billion bond. It'll cost $14 billion over the 40 years, which works out to be about $360 million a year from the general fund to service that. And the state general fund, the total is about $100 billion. So it's less than 1% a year. Let me just circle back. The caller had a question that comes up a lot, the previous caller, about Oregon.
Yes.
Why don't we just get water from Oregon and Washington? Well, the answer is they don't want to sell it to us. They have their own issues. The drought that affected us affected Washington and Oregon as well. And can you imagine what any governor of California would face if he said, hey, I'm going to sell some of our limited water to Oregon and Washington? They'd be recalled. And in the last big drought in 1987 to 92, water leaders in Southern California approached Oregon and started talking with them about moving water south. And there was such a firestorm in those states that it was quickly dropped.
I can imagine Jerry Brown meeting with Nevada's governor and saying, hey, let's sell you some water because Lake Mead is running dry. That would not end well. Let me get to a few online comments. One listener writes via email, your guest says that water will be sent to areas of California most in need, but what areas will get the priority? The state is and has been trying to limit access to water in Siskiyou County for years, but the amount of water needed is completely necessary to maintain an economy based on agriculture. I am worried that Prop 1 will assume priority based on population and leave northern counties high and dry. Jay Ziegler, what do you make of that?
You know, I think the importance of this bond is that it really underscores a direction toward regional supply reliability and ultimately taking stress off the Delta as a water supply source for the rest of California. So I think the investments in this, in water recycling, in groundwater sustainability and cleanup, and in regional water security are really critically important for all Californians, whether they're in the far northern end of California or in San Diego. And so I think that the importance of this bond really is to begin to develop a smart portfolio approach to diversify and build a drought-resilient and climate-change-resilient water strategy for California.
And Barbara Berrigan-Perea?
You know, after the bond passed, the final day of session Friday night before the holiday weekend, our California state senators tried to move through a resolution calling on the federal government to fully fund Temperance Flat, the raising of Shasta and Sites Reservoir. Temperance Flat is looking at 73% the public to bear 73% of the cost for that dam because they claim it would provide public benefits for fish. The idea that we would build dams for fish is ludicrous. Again, those three projects are to produce more water for growers in the San Joaquin Valley, in the Westlands and Kern County water districts.
Let's go back to the phones.
Let me just respond to that, if I might.
Go ahead, Jay.
I think as we've looked at water supply costs for California, it's really an 8-to-1 cost benefit to do groundwater recharge, groundwater storage projects over new surface storage projects. And I think we have a high level of confidence that the California Water Commission in a public process is going to make good, smart water management decisions about investing in the most cost-effective water supply storage options out there. And we believe that is going to be a portfolio that is largely focused on groundwater projects that just make a lot of sense. I mean, we've seen the value of groundwater in this drought, and I think that the restrictions in this bond on where dollars can be spent that have to be used for public benefit, for flows, for water quality, for water temperatures in our streams, they are very clear restrictions. They cannot be used as a subsidy for other purposes.
The California Water Commission is a very highly politicized unit. There has been a lot of pressure put through California for these projects. We know of irrigation districts throughout the state blowing the dust over 20-year-old dam projects. And another, you know, interesting sideline in the water bond is that preference will be given to water storage projects that provide recreation benefits. I do not know how anyone can water ski in an underground reservoir.
Let's go back to the phones now with Michael in Oakland. Michael, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Part of what really puzzles me here is how little we make use of the price mechanism. On a previous show you guys did, it was a major thing on water, and you had Paul there, and you also had Scott Detrow. I believe it was Scott, said that there was a sort of a perverse incentive in place with the water companies where, you know, if they really were to succeed in convincing us to conserve, they would lose money because they'd sell us less water.
I remember that, yeah.
And then if they tried to recoup that money afterwards by jacking up the water rate, people would be doubly mad because they'd say, you know, you've asked us to conserve, we've complied, and now you're charging us more money. The solution to that, it would seem to me, would be to flip that around, to give people some very basic, very minimal quantity of water based on household size and this kind of thing at a low price, but progressively raise the price of water as your water consumption goes up and up and up after that, and, you know, let market forces take care of that so that the water company doesn't lose any money And there is an actual price mechanism in place that pushes people to think about how to conserve. Now, is there some sort of regulated thing that prevents them from doing that, or has no one got the balls to pull it off, or what?
Let me put that to Paul Rogers briefly, and then we'll get back to the more calls about Prop 1. Paul?
Great question, and it is happening in some places. I live in Santa Cruz, and the city of Santa Cruz has exactly what you just described. It has some of the toughest water rationing in California during this drought. Every house gets 10 units of water a month under our rationing system since May 1st. Each unit of water is about $3 a unit. If you use any more than your 10 each month, you're charged $50 a unit. And that basically is a way to get a 25% citywide reduction. And the city has met that target. But many other cities have been reluctant to put that in place because it's politically very unpopular. People get mad at you. Businesses suffer. The fixed cost of these water agencies stay the same. They still have to pay the employees. They still have to pay for electricity. And so if they have less revenue coming in, then, it doesn't change their cost. So you have to charge so much more for using water over a certain amount to even that out that you start getting a lot of sob stories. You know, people say, well, I have more people living in my house, or my I have a medical condition, or I work from home, and it just becomes a political nightmare. Now, if this drought continues and we don't get much rain this winter and we go into a fourth or fifth or sixth year, you're going to see this all over California because many of these cities will be running dangerously emergency level low on water.
Let me get to a few of our online comments. One listener wrote via email, and they seem to be rather unconvinced about Prop 1. One listener writes via email, we should not enable further unsustainable urban sprawl by stealing water from wild and scenic rivers. Rich writes by email, the voters need look no further than cap-and-trade money now automatically going into the Jerry Brown high-speed rail sinkhole to understand why more debt in these people's hands is a bad idea. Richard writes by email, despite weeks of power brokers talking in back rooms about how to make the water bond more palatable to the voters, they could not resist the urge to put pork into it. The bond contains lots of grants to various pet organizations of the legislators with the most tenuous supposed connections to California's water needs. It contains no controls over the funds it gives away to these organizations. They include at least one organization that was the subject of severe criticism in a state audit of how it handled a previous grant. I would say the voters should wait until the politicians give us a pork-free bond initiative, maybe next year. Barbara, this seems to be one of the concerns that you were speaking to about just how the money is allocated and where it's supposed to go.
What we'd really like to see is for voters to vote this proposition down and for it to go back, and in 2016 for a good water bond that will take care of drought needs, regional self-sufficiency, and communities that deserve and need clean drinking water.
Describe that a little bit further. And to be clear, you are against this proposition, not any proposition. What else would it need to have, or maybe not have, for you to be able to vote yes?
What we would really like to see in California is more money put into groundwater cleanup. What was marked for the greater Los Angeles area was not enough. There will be some matching grants locally down there, but you have communities in the east side of Los Angeles that have had terrible water quality for years. There's already $2.9 billion from prior bonds that has not been spent for clean water programs. That money is still sitting there, and it's been re-put back into this bond. There's also $450 million of matching federal grants that haven't been spent. So any bond that move forward, we'd really like to see an additional pot of money to augment that existing money that's already sitting there so we go in and get the job done and not just keep rolling the same subject over every 4 years for a new bond. We would like to see stormwater capture, particularly, again, in urban areas of Southern California, so that those areas can become more regionally independent and less dependent on flows from the Delta.
Juliet writes by email. Let me get to this email question.
If I might jump in there.
Let me get to this email question real quick, Jay, and then I'll let you jump in. Juliet writes via email, why is water storage the only section of the water bond that is, quote, continuously appropriated, unquote? What does this mean and what are its implications? Jay, I was going to put that question to you.
Well, the reason for that is that, candidly, once the projects are started, there's a view that a project might be interrupted at some point in the funding cycle. And I think that the reality also is that if a commission begins to start on a portfolio approach that builds confidence of Californians, then those investments are also going to be likely to succeed. And what we see happening again here is a broad portfolio that will address storage needs in different ways, and that will primarily focus on groundwater recharge and groundwater storage. I do want to underscore that this bond also has significant investments for stormwater management, more than $200 million, and regional supply reliability, and the very provisions for clean, safe, and reliable drinking water that Barbara says that she would support. I frankly think that the reality is that this bond is the right place to start in building that sustainable approach to water management throughout California. And it's one that has the overwhelming confidence of organizations across the spectrum of California. And it's simply a common sense approach to address the needs that people have, whether they're living in San Francisco or San Diego or Tulare County.
Well, let me let Barbara respond to that.
$200 million is not a significant portion of $7.2 billion. We find it much too small. We are losing 10 to 20% of our water in California every year from leaky pipes underground, leaky infrastructure. The EPA estimates that investments in California to fix those leaky pipes would cost billions. We should put money there. If we made those repairs right now, we would gain 500,000 acre feet of water for California.
Let's go back
and
to the
$500 million in the bond for those purposes.
This is Paul. Let me just cut through the politics here a little bit. The reality is this bond needed 2/3 to get on the ballot. And people in different parts of the state wanted different things in it. Farmers wanted even more money for dams. Republicans wanted more money for dams and threatened to withhold votes if they didn't get it. Central Valley Democrats wanted more money for dams. So the idea that there could have been a bond that passed with 2/3 without any money for dams was not going to happen. There weren't the votes there for that. So what happened here is many people in the legislature who didn't particularly want dams, and I think the enviro groups who have endorsed this, the Audubon Nature Conservancy and NRDC, actually oppose all three of these dam projects. I mean, they're not on record necessarily, but they will fight them. The political compromise that had to be done, the horse trading, was you got to put some money in there for dams or you're not going to get the vote for the other stuff. And in the end, the vote was 37-0 in the Senate and 77-2 in the Assembly. So everybody held their nose a little bit. And, you know, lots of people in the farm areas, if you had farmers on this program, they'd tell you there's not enough money in there for dams. And people in urban areas on the coast saying there's too much for dams. So it's part of the horse trading you see in Sacramento to get to 2/3.
It's one of those cases where you can't let the perfect become the enemy of the good, I guess. Let's go back to the phones with one more call. Philip in San Francisco. Philip, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Well, I'm just sick and tired of the Democrats always going to bonds. Why don't we take money out of the general funds of cities, counties, and the state to pay for these measures one by one? If we have a great California Water Commission, why don't they prioritize these projects and let us pay for them one by one by one without paying $7 billion in interest? That's ridiculous.
That's actually a good structural question, Philip. I wonder, Paul, can you answer that? Why not just do this piece of time? Why do it all in one big block?
Yeah, because that's the way we build big things. When you buy a house, you don't write a check for $600,000. Most people don't. It's a large investment over many years, and you pay for it over time. So if you're going to build a big reservoir in a place where it rains the most, nobody lives up there. So who pays for it? The whole state.
We also got a question from Margo in Sacramento. She asked, how about more water to grow food for homes rather than water for lawns or ornamental things? Jay Ziegler?
Well, I think I would count myself, I think all of us on this program are strong advocates for the tiered pricing structure. I think we have to underscore that conservation has to be the top priority in water management for all Californians, urban, rural, and the like. And I think we've all just got to be a whole lot smarter in our water usage. And as Paul notes, the trend across the state is going in that direction. We will see tiered pricing that really drives conservation.
Another listener on. Oh, I'm sorry, Barbara. Were you?
You know, I just wanted to add. You know, our water system for the watersheds are oversubscribed that feed into the Delta and the Bay Area by 5 times. We are going to have to do serious conservation in California, but we're also going to have to address issues of balancing the public trust and deciding where water is supposed to go for the best beneficial use.
Barbara, we're almost out of time for the hour. I want to make sure that both you and Jay have one last chance to kind of put your primary point out there. The one biggest concern that you have in terms of if people vote yes for Prop 1, your number one concern, what is that?
If people would vote for Proposition 1, it will eat up public dollars for boondoggle projects, administrative fees, rather than putting the absolute most amount of money into good water measures for California that will help us with increasing problems with drought and needed water efficiencies.
And to be clear, it's not that you're against a bond. You're against this bond as it's written.
Yes.
And Jay Ziegler, your number one concern if people vote against Prop 1, if we do not pass Prop 1, what's your concern?
Well, if Proposition 1 were to fail, we put at risk water supply reliability throughout California and also begin to go down the road of delinking the importance of providing for adequate flows, adequate protections for our watersheds. And that is not what Californians want. They want to strike a sustainable balance in water management, and Proposition 1 will put us on that track.
Well, this has been a very rich conversation from both sides. I have a feeling this is one that people are going to want to play the podcast of a few times because there's a lot built into this one. You'll be able to find that later today on kqed.org/forum. And we hope you keep the conversation going on our Facebook page and on Twitter at KQED Forum. Many thanks to our guests, Paul Rogers of KQED Science Unit and the Mercury News. Paul, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Proposition 1 supporter Jay Ziegler. Jay, I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Josh, thank you.
And Prop 1 opponent, Barbara Berrigan-Perea. Barbara, thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you, Josh.
And to both of you, thank you so much for an enlightening and, most importantly, a respectful debate. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Laubert. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful weekend. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.